It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Utah, USC. The Utes battle the Trojans for a chance to play in back-to-back Rose Bowls. Pac-12 championship game coverage on The Zone is presented by UCCU. Love where you bang, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're all well. One of the best to cover the Pac-12 joins us now. John Canzano, kind enough to carve out a few moments for us. You can get to his website at johncanzano.com. Also on the radio statewide throughout the state of Oregon. John, how are you?
Hey, John.
Doing well. Exciting week. I'm interested to see what Utah looks like. And when I say that, I mean I'm interested to see what Cam Rising looks like. You know, can he regain that form that he had in the middle of the season?
So, Hans and I have had this argument, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because you have the pulse of the Pac-12. Obviously, there's financial ramifications of USC going to the college football playoff that benefits everybody in the Pac-12. However, having your conference champion, the team that gets you back in the college football playoff, already announcing that they want to leave and that they will be taking off to the Big Ten, is the rest of the Pac-12 USC fans this weekend for the financial gain, or are they kind of leaning Utah because they don't necessarily want to be represented by somebody who's leaving them for a better-looking girlfriend?
I think there's a lot of division. I mean, I know I've talked to people who say, hey, the money's great, and everybody gets to split that revenue, and the silver lining of USC going to the playoff is that the Pac-12 can always say that USC didn't need to go to the Big Ten to get to the playoffs, that there was a path through the Pac-12, so shame on them for leaving. So I think there's a faction of people who, you know, the athletic directors in particular, who would just love to have the extra $500,000 that they'll all get if the Trojans make the playoff. But there's some fans out there that you know, the last team they wanted to see make the playoff from the Pac-12 was USC. Like, even UCLA, you could say, well, they just went because USC was already going to the Big Ten, and there's a chance they may come back. You know, I think you could rationalize that. So I think if Utah gets ahead in this game, it'll be a little bit like Rocky Balboa in the early Rocky movies, with Pac-12 fans, you know, who at the beginning of the game may have gone, well, it's good for the conference to get USC in there, switching sides and chanting Rocky by the end of this thing.
If you could change, John, help us understand the scenarios. By the way, you see it. With a USC win, it means what? As far as bowl appearances, and a Utah win, it means what for both of those programs?
I think it's pretty simple. I think that, you know, Utah winning this game puts Utah in the Rose Bowl. USC winning this game likely puts Washington in the Rose Bowl. And I don't think Utah fans are going to be happy to hear that. But I think the way that the College Football Playoff Committee ranked the teams, they put Utah and Washington right there back to back. I think it'll be a really interesting decision for the Rose Bowl. I don't think it's necessarily fair, because if you think about it, you know, Utah is playing this game because they earned the right to get to the playoff or to get to the championship, and now they have something to lose if they lose the game. And Washington can just sit back and let a Rose Bowl potentially fall into their lap. And I think the same could be said of USC sitting in the four spot in the playoff. And I think there's going to be a lot of people questioning what should have happened or what should happen. Should these championship games be discounted by the committee? Should they be discounted by the bowl games? But I think it's going to be really hard for the Rose Bowl if there's a 10-win Washington team sitting there. Utah went to the Rose Bowl a year ago. Rose Bowl has that cluster provision in their contract where they can pick the matchup that they like. They generally go with the rankings, but it feels to me like it's pretty simple. It's you know, USC to the title game and probably Washington in the Rose Bowl, and unless Utah wins this game. And then I think you have a scenario where Utah goes to the Rose Bowl and USC becomes a pretty attractive candidate for one of the other New Year's Six bowl games, and the Pac-12 could have two teams playing in those games.
That's my follow-up question was, if USC does lose, where do they end up? And you feel like it would probably be another New Year's Six game.
Yeah, I think their ranking, I think they're going to remain high enough in the rankings. And look, we've seen the committee, selection committee, say before that they don't place as much emphasis on the championship game losses as they do the regular season stuff or getting to the championship game. So I think even if USC falls out of the top four, I would not expect them to free fall in this thing. And I think, you know, if I'm the committee, and I think they did that by putting Utah, you know, in front of Washington in the rankings, I think the committee was trying to signal that, hey, even if USC loses this neutral site game, you still put them in a New Year's Six game.
John Canzano, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, so when you look at this game, obviously there is so much on the line for USC and obviously so much on the line for Utah. How do you see this one playing out after Utah had that dramatic win, albeit at home, in a pretty rowdy Rice-Eccles Stadium? Now it's a little bit more of a neutral site, although Utah fans claim that they're going to try to gobble up every available ticket. But how do you think a neutral site affects this game?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I was there October 15th. I came out to see that game in person. I wanted to see it with my eyes because I thought at the time these were the two best teams. And the performance in the second half in particular by Utah was remarkable. And when you look at sort of the quarter-by-quarter stats or even the drive chart of that game, I've spent a lot of time after that game looking at the drive chart because people will remember USC came out on their first three drives and scored 21 points. They made it look pretty easy. They went 75 yards, 80 yards, 69 yards. Didn't look difficult. Two of those drives were under 2 minutes. I mean, they just went right down the field. And I thought, gosh, Utah's got to find an answer. But I do think Utah found an answer about midway in the second quarter. Andy Ludwig and that offense figured something out. And if you look at the drive chart, the last six drives of that game, Utah had five touchdowns on six drives. The only drive they didn't score on in the third quarter was that fumble inside the five-yard line that was unfortunate after a 72-yard drive. So they would have been 6-for-6 on touchdowns. And so I'm kind of wondering, did Andy Ludwig figure something out about the USC defense that he still can use in this game? Because teams change, players get hurt, teams evolve. Lincoln Riley's busy this week saying that was a different game, this is a different team. He may be right. But if you're a Utah fan trying to construct a way that you win this game, I think you have to start with what happened at about the 5-minute mark of the second quarter. And that's where Utah started to dominate this game, and really, they won the game 35-21 from that point. And so I think 36-21 with a two-point conversion. But I think it's really interesting to look at that and then try to figure out how healthy Cam Rising is, because neutral field, home field, away game, you know, I saw Cam Rising at Oregon just a couple weeks ago. He didn't look good, you know, and Utah, because he wasn't right, became an easier out for an Oregon team that had been up and down all year. So you need Cam Rising right. You need your receivers to hurt USC outside the hashes. You need to be able to run the ball. But I'm just leaning into the idea that did Andy Ludwig figure something out that they can use moving forward?
So, John, I've been looking through the USC schedule throughout the year and trying to identify their best win. Their best win might be last week against Notre Dame. You could maybe argue it was against UCLA, but they've got that Utah loss. I'm trying to figure out just how good USC really is, because if USC does get to that college football playoff, they probably match up against Georgia, and that didn't go real well for Oregon. It looked bad for the Pac-12, and it looked really bad for Oregon. So in your assessment, when you look at the best wins that USC has, throw in the one loss that they've got, how good do you really think USC is?
I think their best win, I was there at Reser Stadium in Corvallis when they beat Oregon State 17-14. Oregon State locked them down, made Caleb Williams very uncomfortable. You know, Morgan Scally is watching that tape trying to figure out what Oregon State did to disrupt Caleb Williams and USC and hold them. Really, they had 7 points in that game until the fourth quarter and really gave them fits. And so I talked to Trent Bray, the defensive coordinator at Oregon State yesterday, and he said he felt like Michael Penix Jr. gave them a tougher matchup than Caleb Williams. So I think that's interesting to note that. The teams that USC has struggled against are very balanced offensive teams. When Utah was able to run the ball, use, you know, the tight end, Dalton Kincaid, Cam Rising, you know, on some design runs, and just freelancing himself, that's where, in the second half of that game, where USC started to struggle a little bit. And so, you know, I don't think Notre Dame is very good, guys. Stanford beat Notre Dame. Cal should have beat Notre Dame. I covered Notre Dame as a beat reporter. There's a lot of hype around that program. I think they're generally overrated in most years. When you look at their ranking, I think people want them to be good. They like the brand of Notre Dame. But I'm not putting too much into that win last week. I thought the more impressive showing was USC's victory at Corvallis, tough place to win, and then beating UCLA. USC can score. They can score on almost anybody. But, you know, this game's going to come down to, will Utah take care of the ball? No turnovers. You cannot turn the ball over against USC if you want to beat them. Oregon State did it 4 times and lost that game. And then the other thing is Cam Rising's health. Keep an eye on that. And also, I'm looking for Morgan Scalley and the Utah defense to create a 3-and-out. They did not do that on October 15th. There were no 3-and-outs in that game for USC's offense.
John Canzano with us, 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone. That USC defense, as great as that offense has been, the defense has had some moments, and they showed flashes against Notre Dame. But do you have any faith in that USC defense, not only in this game, but let's say they get past Utah, but going into the college football playoff?
No, Georgia's going to score 100 points on them. I mean, they're not going to stop them. And I think that's the thing, you know, like Utah fans have got to lean into. Like all year long we've watched USC. They ended up better than I thought they would be. I thought they were about an 8 or 9 win team all along. I was like, why are we anointing them the champion, you know, at the beginning of the year? Why are we, you know, let's let them prove it. They've gone out and, you know, they have not turned the ball over. They're very opportunistic on defense. They've created problems for people. But if in this game, you know, Utah, I think, will move the ball. I think they will score on USC. It's just a matter of can they stop USC. And in a championship, tournament, 4-team tournament, Georgia's going to stop USC. Georgia physically at the point of attack. I saw that Oregon-Georgia game up close. You guys saw it on TV. You know, Georgia's tight end is like 6'7", 270. Like, you know, they're not playing. This is another level of football, and I think Georgia's going to win the tournament anyway. But I kind of want to see, like, if USC makes the playoff, I'd like to see him as the 4 seed, because I'd like to see if Caleb Williams and USC can score on Georgia, because I don't give him more than about 24 points in that game at most.
John, are you of the belief that if David Shaw doesn't step down, he's still the head coach at Stanford, or were they ready to move on?
Yeah, I think he would have still been the coach. I think they would have asked him to be change his coordinators and do some of those things they do to respected coaches who aren't performing. I think Stanford's well aware that they cannot compete in this era with the transfer portal unless they're going to relax some academic standards in football. They had one transfer, and it was somebody who transferred in to get an MBA. You know, they're not like Arizona. Arizona had 21 transfers. You can't get Michael Penix Jr. to Stanford. You can't get Caleb Williams to Stanford. You can't get Bo Nix to Stanford or Cam Rising even into Stanford. You just can't do that with their academic standards. And so I think the campus as a whole either has to acknowledge, hey, we're not going to be as competitive in this world. We're going to have to play differently. Or they're going to have to relax the standards because, you know, David Shaw was a guy who, you look at his record, you know, 10 win, 10 win, 10 win, you know, Rose Bowl, and then all of a sudden he can't coach? No, he couldn't recruit. And, you know, he's going 3-9 in an era where Jed Fish is getting 21 new players and Arizona State had 20 new players that, like, you know, we all look around. The success is with those who can get a transfer quarterback and fill gaps.
How appealing is that job? I mean, obviously, there's a scarce amount of them, so there won't be hurting for people that want that job, but is that an appealing job given the landscape of college football right now?
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think it's really risky. And so, you know, I know Bernard Mir, the athletic director there, he has a reputation of being very collaborative, and so I won't be surprised if he leans into Richard Sherman and Andrew Luck and other, you know, notable alumni, John Elway, and says, all right, look, how do we play this game? How do we play the name, image, likeness game? How do we play the transfer portal game differently at Stanford? Because it's not enough right now that at Stanford and Cal, those two schools in particular, that you can go there and you can get a great academic education. You know, that appeals to a lot of people, and maybe they change the style of play that they play, and you know, maybe they change, go away from a quarterback-centric offense and go to the wishbone or something. I don't know. But you can't do what other people are doing right now. So I think the first thing is going to be a lot of collaboration. The second thing will be Stanford, you know, really doing some soul searching and asking the academic side of the campus, hey, is it okay to relax the standards when it comes to football only and the transfer portal? Because if you can do that, I think you can get quarterbacks and receivers and running backs to come to Stanford.
Can somebody win at Colorado, John?
It's risky. Again, that's a risky job. If you look at the track record, that's why I think the Deion Sanders thing was interesting, because, you know, Rick George, the AD there, is a smart guy. He's worked for the Texas Rangers, Major League Baseball, golf tournaments, golf tours. He knows what he's doing. But the fact that it got out that they offered Deion Sanders the job, Deion Sanders not taking that job. He's smarter than that. He knows it's a risky thing for him. He goes there and loses, and all of a sudden the shine's off him. Deion could be the next coach at Florida State when that job opens up. So I think Deion's only going to make a smart move. And Colorado it's a 50-50 proposition. I mean, you're not even Arizona State at Colorado. You can win there, but I think they're probably more inclined to do what Arizona State did and go with somebody younger, somebody who's got ties to the university. Keep an eye on Brian Lindgren, the offensive coordinator at Oregon State. You know, he's got ties to Colorado. But I think beyond Deion, the message we're getting from Colorado is it has to be a recruiting hire, transfer portal hire. Deion, much in the mold of Deion Sanders. So maybe a Dan Lanning-like hire, or, you know, somebody like that that's coming from the SEC that wants a job. But you're not going to get an established coach who's a veteran coach who's going to take that job unless it's their last resort.
You do a lot of radio in Oregon. I got to imagine it's been when Oregon blows a 21-point lead in the third quarter and loses to a rival in Oregon State. No lack of storylines coming out of that game in that state, I'm sure.
Brutal. Just a brutal performance by Oregon. I mean, they had to do so much wrong to lose that game. But Oregon State, you know, I don't know if people in your listening area know how that unfolded. Oregon State ran 15 plays in the fourth quarter. They scored 21 points. All 15 plays were running plays. They never threw the ball, and they overcame a 21-point deficit and won the game. And everyone in the stadium knew they were running, and they were getting 7-plus yards a pop in the run game. But beyond that, Oregon had a punt blocked in the game. They had another occasion where they were punting from their own goal line, and the punter dropped the ball at the one-yard line and then just fell on it. And Oregon State took over and punched it in. And they had another ensuing kickoff where Oregon State kicked off. The ball landed at the one-yard line and bounced straight up in the air instead of going into the end zone. All of a sudden, the Oregon kick returner realized he better take the ball, and he just got buried inside the 10. And then Dan Lanning, on the ensuing offensive possession, goes for it on 4th-and-1 from his own 28-yard line, doesn't get it because Bo Nix, who's got a bad ankle, is trying to run the ball. It was a debacle.
How are we doing on TV negotiations with the Pac-12, John?
Yeah, I think they're going to talk tomorrow. George Kliavkov, the commissioner, is going to talk tomorrow, but I don't think he's going to have any news on media rights. I think, you know, they probably know what the valuation is. I think they're waiting to see what the UC Regents do with UCLA before that comes out. So I'm going to say December 14th, we're going to get news on UCLA, and then sometimes between the 14th and Christmas, we'll probably get a leak of some kind that says, hey, they got a deal. I expect Amazon to be involved. I think ESPN is going to be involved. And keep an eye on the possibility of some crossover non-conference games with the ACC members. I think that is on the table. I think it's a moneymaker for the conference. They could take the big matchups like Utah, Clemson, Oregon, Miami, and you play those games in Vegas or L.A. at SoFi Stadium. And, you know, much in the same way that Oregon played Georgia in that Chick-fil-A kickoff classic, you could create, you know, a windfall of $3 or $4 million for the participants.
You mentioned that meeting with the Board of Regents that got pushed back to middle of December. Is that just, I mean, you know, politicians like to grandstand. Is there a lot of grandstanding going on there? And the end of it, they'll just say, well, there's nothing we can do, and off they go to the Big Ten. Does Cal get a little bit of money out of this, or do they actually, is there actually a concern that they might shut down UCLA's move to the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think UCLA is a little more worried now than they were months ago. I think, you know, I talked to some people in the UCLA community that are decision makers, and they initially were like, it's 99% we're going. Then I heard 98%. Now I'm hearing 95%. You know, so I think they're softening up a little bit, but I think this delay is interesting. I initially thought, you know, the Regents have a lot on their plate, and I was looking at the rest of the agenda items, and it's serious stuff. It's not football. It's student safety. It's student housing. They're dealing with issues that are far more serious than college football. But I also think the Regents, you know, what they ultimately would like is they would like UCLA to come to their senses, and they'd like UCLA to go, hey, you know what? There was more money in this Pac-12 media rights deal than we originally anticipated. We're leaving for $62.5 million. It's going to cost us like $28 million to travel and take care of our students, so we're giving away a huge chunk of that. And if the Pac-12 can present a number to them between now and the 14th of December that, you know, makes it palatable for them to stay in the conference, I think that's a win for the Regents, because then they don't have to come in, they don't have to penalize anybody, they don't have to look like the bad guys. So I actually think this delay is designed to allow UCLA to kind of absorb the landscape, see what's at stake, and ask themselves, do you really want to put your athletes on the road to Rutgers and Northwestern and all these other sports besides football on a regular basis? And, you know, the Pac-12, I do think, probably has put some numbers in front of UCLA that we haven't seen. You know, I am told that they asked ESPN, Fox, Amazon, and others for valuations on the media rights that included UCLA, not USC, but included UCLA. So I know they have those numbers. So I think they're going to put the numbers in front of UCLA, probably are doing that now, and they're going to let UCLA kind of mull it over. But if UCLA decides to go, I do expect that there's going to be a penalty, and then Cal will get a check.
Wow. Hey, really quick before we let you go, I just saw the tweet that you sent out a little bit earlier. The Pac-12 would not tell you who the officiating crew is for the Utah-USC game? Is that right?
No, they won't tell me. And it's funny. I've never asked for a championship game before, so I don't know if this is unusual or not. They would not give me the names of the officials. But they did tell me that, you know, it's the highest graded officials at every position, except no official can go to the championship game 2 years in a row, and it can't be a first-year official, which I think is ridiculous, because now they're treating it like a reward for the officials at the end of the year instead of just putting the best damn officials on the field, which is what Utah and USC deserve. So I'm really curious to see who's going to show up. We'll probably get the names in front of kickoff, but I also want to ask George Kliavkov, the commissioner, tomorrow, you know, what is he going to do to fix this? Because at the very least, they have a bad perception problem. But more likely, look, the officiating in the Pac-12 just isn't on par with other Power 5 conferences. They have no feeder system. The officials are complaining to me privately, saying, you know, I see them and I talk with them and they say, hey, we don't have a feeder system. We're taking officials from Conference USA that aren't trained. And, you know, I'm working with new crew every weekend. And there's a real synergy issue that we see every Saturday play itself out. So I don't want bad calls in this title game. We don't want bad calls to decide the title game. We want to be talking about something else, but the Pac-12 has to let us do that.
John, we could keep you all hour. We appreciate it. We've probably kept you too long anyway, but thanks for your time. Great stuff, and I look forward to catching up with you again here in the near future.
A lot of fun, John.
Take
thanks.
Care. Yeah, I'll be there in Vegas. I'll be excited to see, you know, is Cam Rising healthy? If he is, I think Utah's got a puncher's chance to win this game.
85%? How about that? He's not 100, that's for sure.
Is he better than what he was against Oregon? Against Oregon, he couldn't move. He couldn't plant. Like I noticed against Oregon, he had a brace on. I'd not seen him with a brace on for several weeks. Keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Go to johnconzano.com. You can also follow him on Twitter. Also great radio host in the Oregon area as well.
So to his point, I do believe that Cam is taking a step forward. And I do believe Clark Phillips is going to be on the field. I do believe Dalton Kincaid will be on the field. That's as things stand right now. Maybe if there's a setback between now and Friday, that might be an issue. But I expect a pretty fully loaded Utah team on the field. And I think John is right, and I've expressed this multiple times. I think USC's got gaps. I don't think they're one of the best four teams in the country.
No, no, they're not.
I don't think that they've really been tested. When they were tested against Utah, they couldn't match the test. They couldn't stop the offense. I don't think they're going to be able to stop an offense. There's too many gaps in that defense. And I think that Morgan Scali can look at a few things, try to figure out how to shut down some things. Without Dye running the ball, I think Utah does have a puncher's chance. But as you've pointed out many times, USC's got the world on the line. They got everything on the line. Now, can they step up and can they meet those expectations?
Yeah.
And then it comes down to a quarterback. How much can a single quarterback, how much can one player do? We see how much one player makes a difference, because one team that we talked about had 21 on the field.
Yeah. That's true.
They got 21 good ones on the field. But when you've got one good one and 21 other okay ones.
Okay, pretty good.
How does that match up with Utah?
I mean, as much as I know the Pac-12 is trying to push USC, can you honestly say 100% surety that USC is better than Ohio State? No.
Not a chance.
USC better than Alabama?
Nope.
No.
Tennessee, LSU.
I'm not sold on Tennessee, but maybe I should be.
I think against USC, I would
still probably go Tennessee.
I think
that would
be a pretty good game.
Yeah. Boy, Tennessee would score a whole lot of points in that game with that offense.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Chapman's with us once again from the Lyft Clinic, and you've heard us talk about the imaging. This is, I'm telling you, you need a call, and you need to set up your free assessment and your free imaging. If for nothing else, Dr. Chapman is going to give you a look of yourself that you'll never see before, and you may never see again, because the technology you have to essentially tell the history of somebody's life and the injuries that they've gone through and the trauma that they've gone through that may not even remember is pretty startling.
Yeah, it's very clear. I've mentioned this before, like it's like your own fossil record.
Yeah.
I mean, we can kind of take an approach and see injuries and so forth. But the value, the clinical value of that, besides being really cool and neat and high tech and so forth, is that it gives me as a clinician the tool to see if I can actually help you or not. And that's so valuable, because, you know, so many people that are struggling with these chronic conditions, they're on the hunt for years and years. And, you know, some of these folks are jaded. They've exhausted their insurance options, and they keep ending up sometimes even not as good as they were before they started, you know, with some of these procedures that can be done. So this gives us an idea, a very, very clear, I don't want to say 100% surety, but it's about 90%, 95% surety that we can help them with their particular problem.
That's incredible, too, to think about that. And I know there have been so many people out there, exhaustive searches, trying to find a person that can fix it. We got Brighton hanging out with us. And Brighton, I know that you were on a search trying to figure out what was going on with your body, and you just came across this clinic and these concepts, and you decided to take a leap of faith. Was that out of desperation? Just feeling like you're at the end of the rope?
Yeah, I didn't want to go on a CPAP machine. That's my last, you know, option. And I was just looking for many, because I did a sleep study and I had severe sleep apnea. And they basically said, you know, it's CPAP or, I guess, worst case scenario, doing surgery.
And I don't want to get too much into your physical nature, but you aren't out of shape. You're a very in-shape individual. You're young.
Yeah.
You don't come across as somebody that would be dealing with that. I got to imagine that was maddening.
Yeah, definitely. And I just, especially being 34, I was like, sleep, you know, a CPAP machine. I was like, really? I was like, I'm going to try and find a different way.
I've got 50, 60 years left of life.
That's for my dad or my grandfather.
We're jumping into CPAP.
What we think.
Yeah. Right. That's horrible. And so you came across the clinic, and kind of take us through the process.
Yeah, so I came across the Lyft Clinic, and I called in and scheduled a consultation and went in and sat down, and they did all those tests that they offer up front, x-rays, and we sat down. And
the ones we're offering for free today on air.
Yeah. The CT scans.
Yep. They did that for me, and we sat down. Dr. Chapman spent a good amount of time with me, and he looked at the x-rays, the images, and he said, well, let me kind of dial in here. And it was kind of cool, because he was showing you what he was doing, and the images on the screen, he was moving things around, and he could see that my C1 and C2, the atlas and the axis, that I've learned from from being with you were out of place, and he went and did some measurements online on his with his tools and saw that they were off 4 to 7 degrees, and it causes a whole slew of, you know, tons of problems that I was even unaware of, because I've dealt with high blood pressure, and I don't want to go on blood pressure meds. The headache behind the eyes and a lot of things I didn't realize were hand in hand with what was going on, because I was originally just searching for issues with my snoring,
yeah,
you know, to stop with the sleep apnea from happening and having to go on a CPAP machine. So that's the main reason why I went in there. And then it helped with these other issues I was dealing with as well.
It's really incredible. And as you mentioned before, you felt the change almost immediate.
Oh, I felt like a huge pressure release after he tapped me with his with the tools that he uses. And it just, I just felt it just a huge release. It felt great behind my eyes. I just felt 10 times better. I felt good. I don't know how to, I mean, it felt good.
It's incredible.
It's good flow. You know, you got to have that flow between the brain and the body. And that's the Jim McMahon experience. That's exactly what he said. It's like he felt a drain, you know, in his head, just sort of clear out.
Wow.
There.
Well, tell you what, it's time to get your head on straight. Call the Lift Clinic right now, 801-877-1199. If you're experiencing any of these symptoms, now's the time to get it squared away. 801-877-1199. You get the free complimentary assessment. That includes the imaging, and it's really cool, folks. Go to liftclinic.com for more information. But better yet, just call and get scheduled. 801-877-1199 right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Once again,
championship game.
Kyle Whittingham and the Utes are back in the Pac-12 championship game.
Champs on three. 1, 2, 3. Champs!
Looking for back-to-back Pac-12 titles and another trip to the Rose Bowl. Listen all week long as The Zone gets you ready for a battle in Las Vegas as the Utes square off against USC. Then catch the Ute pregame show this Friday at 5 with the postgame show immediately following the game. Your home for the best coverage of the Utes in the Pac-12 championship game is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're all having yourself a tremendous day.
Those are good dudes, aren't they?
They are.
The Lift Clinic.
Yeah.
Really good dudes. Scotty and I actually don't take this lightly, because we've seen how it changes lives. You've got an opportunity to get a free consultation. And I know that this is not our advertising minute, but I do want to say that these guys really can help you.
Yeah.
And won't waste your time if they can't. But no. You're going to get the free images to show you what you're dealing with, the free scans, x-rays, or whatever the images are. You get those for free so he can take a look at it. There is no risk to you. Just see if he can help you.
All right, good, the bad, the ugly right here on The Zone. How about this? And I don't know if this is good or not, but I certainly think it's interesting. University of Alabama, Birmingham has settled in, apparently, and working out the details with their new head coach. Has no college coaching experience.
Coming out of high school.
Only a little bit of high school coaching.
Tennessee.
And he is Trent Dilfer.
He's been in a high school in Tennessee. In fact,
you have connections there, right?
He coached my cousin's kid that's now at Stanford for a couple of years. He coached at a private academy there in Nashville, Tennessee.
Ran the, what is that, quarterback Elite 11 or whatever program that...
I didn't know he ran that.
Yeah, he had, I don't know if he ran it. He had some heavy involvement in it for quite some time. Then got into the high school ranks, and now, and this athletic director is like, look, you know what? Let's shoot our shot and try to think outside the box. I don't think this will end well, but...
What was he, 14 years pro?
A lot of years professionally. Probably, that sounds about right. Won a Super Bowl, probably the worst starting quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl.
Used to call him 10-attempt Trent Dilfer, because he would only make like 10 attempts.
Yeah.
He had a defense that was so
good. Handoff.
They won it another way.
Yep. Don't turn it over and let Ray Lewis and the defense do their thing. Oh, and if you could throw a slant to a wide open Shannon Sharp against the Raiders, that would work too.
Every once in a while.
Sometimes those are the guys that make better coaches.
And let Tony Siragusa lay on your quarterback for a while on the defensive side.
That's all we need.
Sometimes those are the better coaches, though. They have to think outside of the box. It's not just their talent that they're winning on.
Exactly.
Got to imagine he's probably pretty decent. I'd like to hire. I don't hate on the hire. It's just going to be a big learning curve for him.
I like it. I just don't know if I'd want to do it with the, you know, with the team that I'm a fan of. Like, I'm really fascinated, and I admire their willingness to do it. But if it were Utah, BYU, or Utah State, I'd be like, yeesh, I don't know about this
one. Get somebody with little experience.
Yeah.
He was recently in headlines for shoving a player.
Yes.
Took him kind of back, and the player's parents understood the situation. From what I understood, the parents were like, yeah, you got to get a hold of the kid. He's out of control. You're not listening to the coach. So he's probably going to have to figure out how to deal with those emotions. Boat won't deal with as many emotions, in my opinion, at the college level.
All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Well, I think the New York Jets are in a situation right now with Zach Wilson. I'm hoping that they find a way to move their separate ways. And I'm hoping Zach Wilson lands in a better situation than he's currently in with the New York Jets. For those of you that don't know, Zach Wilson played against the New England Patriots 2 weeks ago. It was week 11. He ended up going 9 of 22 for 77 yards. He was sacked four times, had a QB rating of 50. And after the game, would not take any accountability. They asked, did you feel like you let the defense down? He said no. Whether he understood the question or not, I don't care. At this point, they move forward. Robert Saleh decides he's going to start Mike White. Mike White goes out against the Chicago Bears, Scotty. He goes 22 of 28 for 320 yards and gets a 31-10 win. It is exactly what couldn't happen for Zach Wilson. It's what needed to happen for Robert Saleh. And what I'm hoping is they decide to part ways. Let Zach Wilson go and find a better situation for him. Get him out of New York, because I haven't seen a quarterback in the headlines more than Zach Wilson. And this is his second year, and he's done a whole lot of nothing to even really deserve any recognition or notoriety. And that's actually a positive thing. He should be under the radar.
Yeah.
Because think about the other quarterbacks that suck in the NFL right now. Nobody's talking about them because they don't deserve to be talked about. So let him go. Move him on. Let him go find a better situation for him.
You don't hear us talking about Russell Wilson or Derek Carr. We don't talk about them.
Well, we should talk about Russell Wilson because you did see that Coach Hackett endorsed Russell Wilson and said, what are we even talking about? You're talking to me about making a change at quarterback?
Well, you can't make a change. You're paying the guy $250 million. Like, you got to leave him out there.
You can't sit that guy.
You can't sit him.
You can't sit that much money. Yeah.
All right.
That would be an ugly look.
Well, speaking of the ugly, let's get to that.
And of course, the ugly.
I don't know, man. It goes back to the World Cup.
Yeah.
And for those of you that watched the Iranian team lose to the United States yesterday, it is resulting in some potentially damaging things. Kenneth Timmerman, he's a political author and an expert in Iran, told the New York Post this week that after the team's initial protest of its country's national anthem on November 21st and being bounced from the World Cup, that the players now, Scotty, are potentially facing retribution from their country.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to get into the protest because it goes back a few games or a couple of games where the Iranian players were not singing with their national anthem, and I guess that is disrespectful. They did in the last two matches, including the one against the United States, but they lost to the United States, and now they're saying that that is adding on to the negativity as they return to their country. Timmerman said, I'd be afraid of an arrest. Even if they had won, they would have been arrested, soundly beaten, and warned, don't ever do this again. Now, if that's not enough to hang your hat on, a former CIA covert operations officer, his name's Mike Baker, added a quote to it. He said, this is going to be brutal. Given what we've seen from the Iranian regime, they've shown themselves, to be brutal. And there's no reason to believe that they're going to suddenly become rational. These are the issues that I have. I look at these things that happen in other countries. I look at what's happening with Brittany Griner. I'm looking at what happens with these Iranian players, and I think to myself, God bless this country.
I know.
God bless this country. As much as people want to stir it up and believe that we're all out of whack, you're out of whack. We still have a lot of things put in place that preserve our freedoms. Here are some individuals playing soccer for a country, not singing the national anthem because they were in protest of things that are happening in their country. And their country has some issues right now. And they're looking at being arrested and brutally beaten as they return to their country. Yeah. And whether that happens or not, I hope that we get some reports on it if it does. And so I guess we can all just be appalled and have this fake, we got to do something because nobody's going to actually do anything because it's a different country. You can't control it.
But let's be honest here. Colin Kaepernick takes a knee. Or, you know, NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks decide that they don't want to play in the bubble in a playoff game. Or was it right? Anyway, they essentially don't play a game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of NBA players don't. Okay, what happens? Well, you know, a lot of people support them. A lot of people get angry at them. A lot of people say some things. Maybe some endorsements get lost along the way, things along those lines.
Some people that are on the opposing side stop and think, why would this mean so much to them?
Yes. And a lot of people.
Let me read about it.
A lot of people ask questions. A lot of people try to learn. A lot of people get angry. And a lot of people support. You know what doesn't happen? Their families don't get tortured. They're not thrown in jail. They're not sent to some prison site. They're not, you know, their families aren't accosted. You know, that, again, we may not be perfect, but compared to this, we're pretty doggone good.
We are. And I'm so grateful for this country. You bring up the family situation after the initial protest to not sing, Scotty. From what I understand, the reason they did sing in the next two matches is because their families could face violence and torture if their protests continued. So you're on duty. You're out there working, playing soccer. You decide to protest in a different country. Back home, they're saying, you do that again, you got family here. You want to put them in jeopardy? Just imagine that world.
Yeah. Can't even imagine that.
I'll just leave it at this. I am so grateful to live in this country.
Yep.
And yeah, we got crazy things going on. And we'll continue to figure out these crazy things. We can all be crazy together. But at least I know that if I truly feel something passionate in my heart that's got to change, I can take a stand. I can peacefully protest. And I don't have to worry about my family or my rights or my freedoms being stripped away. These are the things that come from World Cup play. This is the stuff that drives me absolutely mad. And then I look at our country and I think, God bless the United States.
Yeah. Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Whole World News coming up next.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined right now by youth safety, RJ Hubert.
Kyle Whittingham, unprompted, said, yeah, we didn't backdoor it, and pretty much everybody's picking SC. How do you respond, if at all, to all this stuff about SC this, SC that?
Honestly, it is what it is. They'll say what they want to say, and it's all just blabber to me. I understand why they're upset. They lost a really close game, and of course they have an opportunity to avenge that here. We're definitely not looking past them by any measure. They're still very talented. They're still a very good team. So yeah, I don't really pay attention too much to any of the talking, and I know there's a lot of it and a lot of people count us out, but it is what it is. We don't mind it.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10. Presented by Murdoch Hyundai, Utah's number one Hyundai dealer for 16 years in a row on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Number one.
Miss any part of the show? Every moment of every show is available in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your favorite podcasting platform or online at kslsports.com. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G, presented by You First Credit Union on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for making us part of your day. By the way, big announcement coming up tomorrow. We just got the text from Madison. Get ready to get to KSLSports.com tomorrow, folks. Hey, the 80s comedy bracket was so much fun.
We had a blast with it.
We decided to do a Christmas bracket.
Ferris Bueller came out as the greatest 80s comedy.
Which is spot on accurate.
Beat Christmas Vacation, which is not spot on accurate. That's not who should have been in there.
No, no, no. Christmas Vacation. Game. Although Christmas Vacation will have a chance to go toe-to-toe with Die Hard.
You think that's going to be the finals?
I think that will be the championship match. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen the bracket. I don't know if they're on the opposite side.
A Christmas Story has to be in the finals.
I you know what?
I know it's generic and it's...
You know, hot sports take or hot movie take. Christmas Story's not that good. It's fun. But is it a absolute classic?
That was a bad take.
That was a terrible take.
No, it's a fine movie. It's a fine movie.
It's the best Christmas movie.
Just when we feel like we know you.
Wait a minute. So if it was Christmas Vacation and A Christmas Story toe-to-toe, you would take A Christmas Story over Christmas Vacation?
Man, talk about having one of my kids in each hand hanging over a cliff. That's a really tough one.
You know what? It's time to let Macaulay Culkin go.
Yes, let go.
Let go.
And probably dropping the Home Alone star.
Yeah. And that's A Christmas Story.
Barely, though.
Not barely. No.
I'm talking about
it. So it's not that
it's an
like,
easy decision.
Whoa.
But you're right. Christmas Vacation is definitely in the mix as the greatest all time. But there are some underdogs. Die Hard is going to be in
there. Die Hard is not an underdog. Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Bad Santa?
Jeez.
I cannot believe
you chose that one.
Me?
Yeah. I didn't even know you've ever seen that.
Now, look. Now, if you want to go Christmas Vacation versus Trapped in Paradise, now that's a hard decision.
No, it's not. You know it's not. Don't even. Our Christmas movie bracket is going to be a blast. It gets released tomorrow when Scotty and I kick the show off, and we'll have some fun with it. We need your vote.
Lift Clinic's hanging out with us in studio. Dr. Chris Chapman, also Brighton Lawrence, kind enough to hang out with us. And Dr. Chapman, I got to imagine you love hearing the success stories of people that are dealing with pain, with nausea, with headaches, all kinds of just horrible symptoms. You have mentioned Bell palsy. You can help out with issues surrounding that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that and any of those nerves that come out around the base of the skull to the face and neck and head, those can all be benefited by getting head on straight.
Yeah,
frankly.
Do people that get diagnosed with TMJ, do they even know that this is a possible help?
No, usually they don't. They bounce from practitioner to practitioner to practitioner, and they get orthotics and physical therapy, and some of those things can make it a little bit better, but really they all miss the mark, like the underlying mark of one of these critical problems, how the head sits on the neck, because that affects the jaw, affects the trajectory of the jaw. And then that affects the temporomandibular joint, which is all TMJ. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brighton, and you mentioned your story as well. I mean, you just didn't want to go to a CPAP machine.
Right.
So you start doing your research, you stumble on the Lift Clinic, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute. Not only is my sleep apnea taken care of, but my headaches, my high blood pressure, like all these other things that weren't even really on your radar when you went to the Lift Clinic, those were resolved.
Right. Yep. Big help.
So when you stumble upon this and, you know, and Dr. Chapman, I think, has talked about this as well. I think there's a lot of people that don't know how poorly of a situation or how bad of a situation they're in until they actually get it improved. And they're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm in a better spot because you learn how to deal with it. Correct. And I'm sure that was in your case as well.
Oh, yeah. 100%. It's one of the best things I've ever decided to do. It's helped me out a lot. Thank you, Dr. Chapman, by the way.
You got it, man. I'm
helped me out a lot.
Glad to do it.
Well, I want to bring up something with that as well, because I think people have this idea that it's a monthly chiropractic adjustment.
Yeah.
They have this idea of, so your neck is kind of out of joint. It gets put back in joint, comes out of joint. Help people understand the fix. Help people understand how this improves and how many times you have to return.
Yeah, very good. Well, it is a procedure up front, so we do reposition the atlas and the axis under the base of the skull. So that is a procedure, image guided. But then to get it to stay there, because it's a very mobile joint, what we've brought on and really developed is this intraoral appliance system that actually stabilizes the jaw and the head and the neck relationship, so it doesn't relapse. So in order to get it to hold, you know, so you don't have to do that revolving door relationship, is we've had to identify what those forces were that actually caused the relapse of that process and that procedure. And we've identified that. And so that part of our technology is actually building and fabricating that individual intraoral stabilization appliance.
So it holds it in place.
It holds it in place gently.
Do you wear that just at night, or do you wear that through the day?
You know, for the first little therapeutic period, because since we want to train the body and we want to get as much of the body functioning around this new position as possible, we do it 24/7 for about the first 4 months, and then wean you off of it. And then it's just a nighttime thing.
Call 801-877-1199. You get the assessment, you get the images, all of that for free, and then you can decide if you want to proceed. But take advantage of the free stuff. It's the Lift Clinic, 801-877-1199. That's 801-877-1199 for that free complimentary assessment and the images. Again, 801-877-1199. We'll chat with Jay Hill next right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.